everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. Detroit Tall says, ultimately. That is indeed how I say ultimately. That's how you guys want me to say it, right? But to me, it's very hard to remember when I speak naturally to say ultimately. Ultimately. Micronova sends a super chat. He says, Donald Trump Jr. always punctuates his post with, hey guys and you guys. For some reason, it seems disingenuous. Like a 30-year-old at a high school party attempting to fit in. Yeah, I've been watching some of these posts of Donald Trump Jr., not many, but whenever I see them, I feel a massive discomfort. Like he's filming this in a non-personal manner. I don't know how to describe it, but I don't feel the human behind Donald Trump Jr. I feel that he is being performatively human. And that is something very, very hard on the internet. You cannot be that. People detect this instinctively. And I don't know, there's something impersonal. He's using a lot of you guys, hey guys, and kind of to diminish his own level. And it just doesn't work with him. It could work with a teenager out there, could work with someone who's really at the bottom of society. But for someone of his stature to be changing his language that way, I cannot believe that this is his natural way of interacting. And there's always this feeling that, and I don't want to spread false rumors here. This is based on zero, except just my feeling. It feels like he's on drug or something. It feels like he's on cocaine or something like this with teary eyes. I don't know. I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling the human. And yes, someone else was saying we don't need a softer version of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is cucked enough. That is a big problem. I don't have any enthusiasm at the idea of Donald Trump Jr. developing a political career because he can only be softer than his dad. That is too bad, really. I see him today siding with Bud, basically telling his audience, look, guys, you gave them a good lesson, but Bud is giving to the Republican Party. It's like, that's how you never win politically. If you're not willing to drive your opponents into the mud, into the ground, and dead, you're not going to win anything, because the left always wants us dead. If the right is always, let's be reasonable here. A boycott of Bud for 2 days was good enough to make them understand the message. No, I would want Bud to crash. I would want Bud to disappear. That is, and it's not even an emotional thing. It's just what's needed to accomplish something in society. We need all of the business major classes of the future to always say Bud has been bankrupted by this story, and it never existed again for the next 100 years. That is how you change a society. Cindy Lou says, Bud is losing a lot of money. I guess they told Donald Jr. to quell the crowd. That's exactly what it is. And this is how you never end up having a right-wing Republican Party. You always have so much links of interest with the economic world that basically they are as much purchased by the machine as the Democrats. So that's why they can't be radical about anything. It's because eventually someone gets hurt in their friendships, their relationships. And I'm not saying that the boycott of Bud was stellar. And, you know, I've been looking at the stock market value. You know, maybe it's this V right here, this V down. If you attribute the maximal drop, which I'm not even sure is all of the boycott, that is still a very small drop. It's like it's a drop that would be expected as part of normal market variation. Of course, perhaps the momentum helped it to concentrate in a single drop. So it's not like we succeeded at crashing Bud. But I would want to crash Bud. At least let's agree on the moral question here, and then we can talk about whether we can make it happen. But we should want to crash Bud. We should want to send a message to any future marketer: if you deal with the far left, you're going to be punished by most normies. That would be beautiful. Carlota says, beautiful words from JF. Thank you. Because, yeah, these titles, Bud Light Halt's promotion with Dylan Mulvaney, transgender influencer, after share value plummets, parent corporation's shares lost $6.6 billion in value in single week. I talked about this yesterday, and someone in the crowd reminded me, JF, you know, when you look at the stock market, it's not that much of a drop, and it's comparable to what they were a few days ago. And yes, I have to admit that it is the case. It is not a massive drop. It could be unrelated. Now, there is a strong impression that the sales are dropping. And sometimes the sales can drop and the stock market doesn't have to be impacted immediately, because the people in the stock market don't necessarily know what will be the impact on the end of year number yet. Timbleman says, LBC to $5. Waves is the next unicorn, an insider trade. It's going to 200. Okay. Okay, I mean, very hard to predict these things. Of course, I'm super enthusiastic about LBC. Waves, I think I've spoken about Waves back in the Satoshi Street Bets days. I don't remember. It's an item for trading in an exchange, I believe. Don't know much about it other than this. Nicholas Petris says, any feelings/thoughts on Dick Masterson's right-wing counter-signaling on Twitter? Well, Dick Masterson has always been in that place, so I'm not surprised. I've never considered that Dick Masterson is a right-winger. He is a kind of masculinist centrist. That's always how I saw him. And I don't take issue with it. I think... given his work for Liberty, his work for Backed By, a Patreon alternative, I think that there is great potential with him, you know, producing stuff for society without being explicitly right-wing. And then he can criticize the right-wing all he wants. I mean, I don't even follow him that close to know exactly what he did. But yeah, often I see him place himself against the right, and that's totally fine. We want if all the leftists were like Dick Masterson, we'd have a very, very productive public conversation, let me tell you. Total Grimm sends me 25 LBC, which, according to the prediction by our audience member earlier, is the equivalent of $150 million. No, $150 or something like this. As American cultural icon, should the Biden administration step in and bail out Bud Light? Should intelligence/military resources be deployed to neutralize the threat to our democracy posed by anyone not consuming Bud Light? You are asking in a parodic manner, kind of sarcastic manner. But let me tell you, this is part of the game too. I'm sure that Bud Light is giving stocks to the American government in some form. I'm sure these big companies, McDo, Bud Light, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, they all end up furnishing big corporations at enormous prices. Like they make a lot of money from this. Like sending Bud Light to Iraq for the American military for the yearly party, that kind of crap. Or starting a McDonald's counter in Iraq for the war, whatever. That exists. And So in a way, you can count on the Biden administration. If we were any successful at making the Bud Light executive tremble in their pants, let me tell you, there would be a kind of bailout that you'd never hear about. Cindy Lou says, that is what they compared it to, Gillette, when they went woke. Yeah, and I'm afraid, I've said it many times in these cases, in all these cases, I'm afraid that what is developing is a cycle of, oh yeah, that's the business, that's the marketing business today. You make a public error, people talk about you, they imprint your name in their head, and then in your apology process, you try to gain more clientele. And I'm afraid that double dipping has been regularized as a feminine contribution to modern marketing. See, past marketing, generally, you can call it deceptive, you can call it whatever you like, you can call it even misogynistic. But classical marketing was you send a message and it sticks with some people. It was a single shot thing. I'm afraid that what is developing is a whole business of feminine double dipping, which women are an expert at, you know, saying something stupid on Twitter, inviting Nick Fuentes to your interview and then apologizing and then getting coverage on the apology and then de-apologizing and saying, I'm thinking about re-uploading the video and then getting coverage on the video. And then re-uploading the video and then going to a black podcast to say, I'm sorry, guys, I didn't realize how racist my re-upload was. I mean, these fucking women are unbelievable. They really don't care. It's like no sense of honor. For a man, it's like, lady, that's frustrating. But no, woman, do not give a shit. It's like a fucking philosophical zombie advancing through maximal exploitation routes. It's like ChatGPT. ChatGPT levels of, I don't care. This is the best thing I can display right now. Here it is. Holy shit. Anyways, all this to say, when you think about this Bud Light advertisement campaign, it's all playing out in that way. It's, okay, we're going to get onto the double dipping. We're going to create an issue for your company. People are going to talk about it. You're going to get all the coverage on the right-wing side, and then you're going to get the backlash on the left, which will side with you, and ultimately those depressed leftists, childless 40-year-old women are the ones who are going to buy the Bud Light, and when you do your apology, or when you end up standing with your initial advertisement, they're going to side with you. It's extremely, it's immoral. It disgusts me, even as a moral nihilist. John Drake says, all large companies are under the thumb of the banks to kneel to ESG. Yeah, that is too bad. Cindy Lowe says, she said she got hired to do so, and so I can't remember her name. Yeah, this woman who does the marketing at Bud Light. Thieves steal 2 million dimes worth $200,000 from Big Rig parked in Philadelphia Walmart. When you steal your money in dimes, you better have some good transport. Talk about taking QE to another level. Today, in If Fed Policy Was an 18-Wheeler News, a trailer containing 2 million dimes was broken into and looted in Northeast Philadelphia this week. The trailer contained hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of dimes. After a discovery of the trailer was made at 6 a.m. and Thursday morning, police commented that roughly 2 million dimes worth about $200,000 were stolen. You can totally expect people starting to pay with dimes in Philadelphia. It's going to get into the market, spread into the market. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite platform to receive support for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. And if you want to support the show on a longer term basis, join the Backed By. If you have access to the Polygon blockchain, you can send me crypto through Backed By on a monthly basis. You can send me, support me on Patreon, Subscribestar. And yeah, very soon we should organize our private hangout on Subscribestar. Let's set the date soon, but not tonight. When I'm in a restaurant, conservatives stare uncontrollably with jealousy at how liberals can turn simply eating and drinking into something so seductive and breathtaking. Okay, let's... Careful, guys. You are about to be seduced. This is not so seductive. I think she was more beautiful when she didn't eat. And anyways, she can't eat this. She's going to get fat if she continues. So it's all for show. Like, did she even swallow these hot dogs? Connecticut man fights off four suspects in attempted carjacking in harrowing video. Carjacking here in Connecticut. So that's the carjacker coming to... Look, Fox News, I don't want to see all the publicity when I merely pause the video, okay? Carjacker coming in. Oh, no, that's not the... Yeah, so that was the owner of the car running.
Who do you think you are? Get out of here.
Unbelievable. They were all in a group of four. One was driving, two were waiting in the car, one was trying to start the car through some method. Someone, apparently, perhaps a neighbor or the wife of the guy, I don't know.
Yes, they just try to grab our car, and it's a Mercedes, and they're peeling out. Sorry.
Unbelievable. We can't have property anymore. People are trying to drain all of it. Mr. Beast is at the center of a controversy because one of his employees, who often appears in his videos, apparently, is trans, I believe, and he's been talking in some videos about the process of transition. So it's a guy that he was collaborating with for a long time, and then he became trans. But people were reminding of old Mr. Beast videos, including those that were touching on trans questions. And this one is claimed to be a deleted Mr. Beast video.
All right, time to see if they've updated the gender list. They have 63 genders up there, but they can't have my gender.
Young Mr. Beast, apparently making video about the trans question.
What are you doing? Bro, did you just assume my gender?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to misgender you.
You're such a heliphone. Get out!
I sexually identify as an attack helicopter. Ever since I was a boy, I dreamed of soaring over the oil fields, dropping hot, sticky loads on disgusting foreigners. People say to me that a person being a helicopter is impossible. I'm having a plastic surgeon install rotary blades, 30mm cannons, and AMG-114 Hellfire missiles on my body. From now on, I
All right, Ariel Suarez says he initiated the attack helicopter gender identity. Are you serious? We learn things every day. As a man who lives on the internet, I didn't know. I didn't know that the attack helicopter gender came from Mr. Beast. Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. And today, he was saying that he was tired about the harassment of his employee for being trans, that he stands by his trans employee. Well, of course, he has doesn't have much choice. It's not like you can fire someone for being trans. Naberius says the making fun of trans to trans pipeline. Yeah, in a way, that is exactly what we see here. Making fun of trans and in the process of faking it, and your brain perhaps approaches this idea, you know, which is why I'm totally against encouraging people to explore gender switches and even in play, even in Halloween costumes, because I think that a bunch of people may have their first experience of a dopamine reward in those kinds of moments. And very dangerous to me to take a young adult or young child and like disguising your son as a fairy. I would never do this. That is something that can seed an idea in their brain that you don't want there. Lendald Guntram says, I thought it was fully fictitious. However, he proved it was fully real. Yeah, sometimes fiction comes from... It makes me think about the revolutionary phenotype a little bit and the selfish gene. You know how Richard Dawkins had said that sometimes science is... The facts are so unbelievable that they look like a science fiction movie. That is pretty much how I feel with respect to evolutionary theory and the revolutionary phenotype. And sometimes the idea becomes more real than the reality that is in front of your eyes. Cindy Lowe says, what the doctors are doing, they have to give the hormone blockers and go with the trans thing or lose their license. A law was just passed somewhere in America about it. Yeah, there's a lot of leftist pressure on doctors. The doctors that disagree with this, what they're going to do is, as soon as the question of gender dysphoria is raised by any patient, they will say, I'm not an expert on this. I'm going to have to refer you to the expert. But this creates a pipeline where the children or the adults, instead of getting the pushback that they should get, like... For anything, you would get pushback. Like, if I hurt my finger, I could see a doctor that tells me, oh, here's the best thing you could do. And I could see then another doctor that thinks differently. And this will improve my care because I'll get choice. I'll get, oh, okay, if I repair it that way, if I repair it this other way, there will be different consequences. But you don't have this in the gender dysphoria domain. Way too much fears of... Because these doctors are working professionally. You have to understand that if they do a single thing that can be construed as discriminatory, they're going to get sued for millions of dollars. They're going to lose any of the profits they made throughout the year. So what they do is, okay, well, I disagree, but I can't say it to him. So I'm going to refer you to a specialist clinic. And the specialist clinic is a churning machine to pass people through the trans process. This is extremely worrying. Donald Trump Jr. opposes Bud Light boycott, citing companies' donations to Republicans. This is not an argument, bro. Are you telling me that you're not even a politician yet and you're already purchasable that way? Like, okay, if a leftist company that promoted extremely anti-family ideas has been donating to the Republican Party, then everything is fine. Donald Trump Jr. defended beer conglomerate Anheuser-Busch on his podcast Thursday, urging listeners not to continue boycotting the company. Trump claimed that the company was too iconic to continue boycotting and that the executives have learned a lesson. So here's the deal. Anheuser-Busch totally shit the bed with this Dylan Mulvaney thing. I'm not, though, for destroying an American, an iconic company for something like this. There you go. This is why we lose. This is why we'll always lose. It's because we can't be as ruthless as our adversaries. The leftists, they don't care about destroying American companies. It's either the companies side with them or they get destroyed. They will physically destroy them with Molotov cocktails sometime. And the Republicans are just not able. It's the Republicans not only are not capable of the levels of vandalism, that of criminal vandalism that animates Antifa, we're not even able to use our free choice to say, hey, I'm not going to, because when you participate to Bud Light, every beer that you buy, some amount of money goes to Dylan Mulvaney. Some amount of money goes to furthering the progression of trans ideology in America. And therefore, you should never want to buy a Bud Light again. It should be clear. But it's not for Donald Trump Jr. because some of that money gets to him. Mike Renova says, for people wanting to use not violence to stop trans doctors, you can get a referral. Micronova, that is an unacceptable comment. I will be deleting it. Stop doing this because I want to be able to read the chat. And if I read the chat, I want to be confident that my users are not spamming it with traps. So stop it, Micronova. Next time you're banned. SEC sides with conservatives over launching PayPal discrimination probe. The Securities and Exchange Commission sided with conservative investors this week in their request to investigate what they say is PayPal's systematic political and religious discrimination against customers. Over the objections of PayPal's management, the SEC allowed a proposal by the National Center for Public Policy Research to go to a shareholder vote at the company's next annual meeting. This decision follows a similar decision on March 29, in which the SEC greenlighted a proposal regarding alleged political and religious discrimination at JP Morgan Chase, America's largest bank. That is awesome. That is awesome. I mean, I don't know if it's going to work, but the fact that there is an awakening to the idea that corporate censorship of, and financial censorship in this case, of mostly the right wing and of almost all the right wing, there will be board boundaries to it, and you may eventually get punished. Now, so we have the SEC being investigating the case. Of course, maybe they're going to find that they... Oh, no, just like there was some investigation done on Twitter and they had concluded there is no censorship of conservatives on Twitter. Ridiculous. So maybe the SEC will conclude the same for PayPal. That would be too bad. But simply the fact that a public policy research center that seems to be advocating for less conservative censorship will be at the shareholder vote and will be able to speak out and say, hey, the company that you're voting for right now, the company that you own through your shares, is censoring conservatives. That is extremely interesting. Bud Light sales went down 80%. I don't know if we can trust this kind of report. Like, I would love it if Bud Light sales went down 80%, but is it true? Ariel is reporting this. Who is this guy? Where was this screenshotted from? The marketing department went off on its own and created a campaign supporting LGBTQ people and lost us a lot of business. They've all been terminated. Has this ever been said by the Anheuser-Busch CEO, Augustus Anheuser? That seems like it could be an item of fake news, but there it is. I don't know. I cannot prove that it's fake news, but it's spreading this kind of stuff. It's spreading on Twitter. And how would they know that 80% of the Bud Light sales have been dropping? And on top of it, I see April 6th as the date. Was the momentum of the campaign to boycott Bud already at its maximum on April 6th? That's like 9 days ago. I don't know. Sounds incredible. Naberius says, looks fake. Michel Doukaris is the chief executive officer of Anheuser-Busch InBev. Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, and it's weird that the guy would be named Anheuser because it's the name of the company, but it's such an old company that I don't expect it to still be in the hands of the founder. Yeah, so thanks for the info. It does look like... I wouldn't trust this, but it's spreading and the boomers are retweeting this crap. The boomers with American flags in their bio, they're so annoying. Fungal outbreak affects over 90 workers at Michigan paper mill. 19 confirmed cases of blastomycosis, a type of fungal infection, have been linked with a Norton, Michigan paper mill, with a further 74 people believed to be probable cases, according to local health authorities. Public health officials said on April 7 that both confirmed and probable cases are workers at Escanaba Billerud paper mill. Well, my general rule is if it's a fungus, it's not going to be a huge epidemic and you can shut down your fear-mongering right away. Tech Lead was expressing doubts about the continued possible success of ETH. They were saying now the fund begins. $2 billion of ETH flooding onto the market in the next 2 weeks. The first round was mostly partial withdrawals from Lido and old validators. It takes 3 days to get into the withdrawal queue, hence the delay. Kraken and Binance, 70% of exits are now getting started. And I was asking the question, and I'm happy that someone responded to help me. I said, doesn't people withdrawing mean they are putting them in cold storage, therefore indicating an increased interest for the currency? Because it seems that withdrawal normally is associated with people trusting the currency over trusting where they have deposited it, basically the exchanges. But someone told me, no, those are withdrawals from validators, and they are staked, basically staked ETH. So I guess it's the whole proof of stake system, where to be a validator, you need to deposit a large amount of ETH and show that basically you own a large share of it. And when they withdraw it, it means that they're not withdrawing it to invest. They're withdrawing it to sell it. Well, that is interesting. Perhaps we're headed toward a drop of ETH price. I personally don't care that much because I'm 1% ETH. I'm 98% BTC, approximately. But, I mean, perhaps there will be a drop, but personally, I'm confident that ETH in the long run would recover from a current drop. In the long run, there will be alt seasons after BTC peak. And in the long run, there will always be the shit coins, the waves of shit coins coming at us from the ETH world. I was thinking about starting a shit coin today. So I've been fascinated by our Twitter space conversation with Roko ETH, you know, who laid out in front of me a an existing crypto that seeks to find the truth. A crypto where people try to identify the truth. If you get it right, right being the majority at first, you inherit from a token that represents the branch of people that were right. And if you got it wrong, well, most of the time, the thing gets resolved and everyone agrees on the truth. So most of the time, it's just, if you vote for the right thing, you get rewarded. But eventually, there can be a conflict. And if there's really a mass of people who say, no, no, this is the truth, and a mass of people who say, no, no, this is the truth, then the token splits. And those people who got it, those people who have it one way will be retained in history as, okay, this is the people who voted yes. The other people, this is the people who voted no. And eventually it is believed that their token would lose credibility long term if they had many, you know, many wrong calls in the process. So they would be punished for getting it wrong in the long term. I think this is fascinating to me, but I think it's not a perfect system. But I don't know how do we design a token that always finds the truth, that incentivizes people to be honest. And I keep thinking, to me the slicing example is race and IQ, for example. This is the thing that triggers so much leftists. So how do you resolve the fact? Let's say I was to ask the question to the blockchain: is IQ associated with race? There's always going to be a bunch of leftists, probably overpowering the truth-finding process here. Lots of people saying no, it's not related at all. And I'm like, how do we say this is not true? How do we say this? How do we get to the truth with an economically incentivized model? And I still haven't found an answer. If I find an answer, if it's brilliant, I'm starting a shitcoin, truth or truth token or something like this. Well, of course, Trump kind of took the truth label, so perhaps I would have to find another appellation. But yeah, we have to resolve the truth-finding process so that it's displayed out there. Can you imagine a display that reminds people of the truth that was found in a decentralized manner that no one can censor, that just stands there as a sign that says, fuck you to any of the liars. This is the truth. And it's been found by a system that has been 100% correct since the beginning of time. That would be a nice shitcoin. Carlota says they're triggered by things they know are true. Tottlegrim says something similar to a reputation score on buyer/seller sites. Yeah, but you have a problem with these systems. That is the system basically that animates Wikipedia. So the editors, they have a high hierarchy within them. But the problem is it's equally dominated by the left. The left eventually finds a fascination with having their bureaucrats, their technocrats, their paid agents. They get into the system and they build a reputation within the system. So can you imagine if you have millions of people potentially, or millions of inputs at least, who would come in and who would just be interested at saying the truth to accumulate a reputation so that when the question is truly controversial and when the left really wants a false answer, they fit it in with their reputation built up. I still haven't solved this problem. How do we get to the truth? I know how we get to the truth personally. I know empiricism. I know axiomatic truths. I know coherence. And perhaps coherence would be the weakness and the armor here. Because here's the thing. When a leftist lies about race and IQ, they show their incoherence with other sets of the knowledge, other parts of the knowledge set. See, they will show blind belief in the peer review process when it comes to the vaccine, but they will show sudden hesitation in the peer review process when it comes to race and IQ. And perhaps the only way to ensure true finding is to hold people to a coherent standard. But that is programming this on the blockchain, let me tell you. Okay, you said yes to this question. Are you being coherent with what you said in the past about your beliefs about the peer review process? Should the peer review process be, you know, we could hold people to, okay, if you don't believe that race is associated with IQ, here's a list of 15 other things that you have to deny. And in these 15 other things, perhaps we could find leverage there to say, well, you can't say yes to this question if you said no to this other question. Cindy Liu says, something is happening with TD Bank and the digital ID thing. I'm not aware of this. No ID. Stephen Robinson says, oh yeah, Gerard Ken says Veritas. And the S is a cash sign. I love this crypto ID. Veritas. Hey man, do you have 0.3 Veritas? Do you have 0.3 Veritas? I really need the list of JF's argument on race and IQ. Oh man. Oh, there's so much. The shitcoins are an infinite, it's like a universe of infinite future potential. You can have fun, you can have dreams, you can imagine any shitcoin. Stephen Robinson says, yes, cryptos are successful when they reach cult status. Carlota says, the moment you don't show any of the evidence, you're not doing science, regardless of the veracity of what you decide to show. Yeah, so then that gets us into a super complex question, which is, if we have to implement on the blockchain a coherent system of truth finding, that means, like, for the question, is race influencing IQ? There's like 200 different little questions we have to ask. Do you believe that when scientists go out there and record the IQ of individuals, do you believe that they record something? Like, do you believe that that self-identification of race is generally accurate with respect to genetic reality? And if you have these 500 questions and 500 answers from the person, perhaps we could find a way to say, all right, this person is lying. You know, this person is wrong. They're wrong by objective standard, because here's something they have to deny that the absolute majority of people would not deny. Perhaps the lies are more entropic than the truth. And if they are so, they can be detected. Perhaps the ways in which people lie tends to differ across different minds. Cindy Liu says, a bunch of people said they were not letting people agree to the terms and conditions, just pushing it through end of April, something about verified.me. Oh. Well, I don't know. I'm not with TD. I have no idea what's going on. IMF unveils new that doesn't sound like good news. New global currency known as the Universal Monetary Unit to transform the world economy. This looks like a mimetic attack on the multipolar world. This looks like, hey, so if people are abandoning the USD, let's create this other coin that's not called USD. A new global currency just launched, but 99% of the global population has no idea what just happened. The Universal Monetary Unit, also known as Unicoin. It's like, this is so beautiful. We are in 2023, and the internet is so desirable that the IMF is trying to emulate the internet's tradition of shitting out shit coins. They've shit out their own shit coin, and they called it Unicoin. Is an international central bank digital currency that has been designed to work in conjunction with all existing national currencies. This should set off alarm bells for all of us, because the widespread adoption of a new global currency would be a giant step forward for the globalist agenda. The IMF did not create this new currency, but it was unveiled at a major IMF gathering earlier this week. As the press release quoted above indicates, this new universal monetary unit was created by the Digital Currency Money Authority. Count me out. Count me out. Whatever that is, this is a way to grab power for a globalist elite. And whatever, you know, make your universal monetary currency will be denominated in Bitcoin, no matter what you do, no matter what you want it to be. I'm considering buying your digital currency whenever I'm satisfied that Bitcoin isn't the future of currency, which may be never. Anyways, they're probably going to implement this as ways to transfer money between countries. They're going to implement this to keep control from the IMF perspective. So the IMF has always been this super aggressive organization that seeks to dictate sovereign nations what they have to do, and in exchange they pay them. It's absolutely anti-democratic, to be avoided. And they're probably just, if they succeed at this currency having any meaning, it's probably going to be in their way of dealing with countries. And they're probably going to be able to drop, say there's a country in Africa and they want that country to do X, Y, Z. They're going to get them to do X, Y, Z by giving them their shitcoin. It's like, at this point, you look like Richard Hart. At this point, you look like you are supposed to be this extremely evil globalist empire. You're copying teenagers on the internet. That is, I didn't expect to see this in my life. These are America's most diverse cities. Which cities in the United States are the most diverse? It depends on the definition. As Statista's Katarina Buchholz details below, an analysis of American community survey data shows that the metro areas appearing most diverse at first glance might not be the most mixed places after all. Well, that we've always known. We've always known that diverse means non-white. And so it seems that white people, wherever they go, they cannot contribute to the local diversity. We are drainers of diversity. We just don't count. So what do we have? Well, it's a line of cities on the East Coast and then a line of cities in the center of the U.S. Texas, Connecticut, Florida, North Carolina, KS, Kentucky? I don't know. Kansas, California, Hawaii, Texas, California. Yeah. So many cities from Texas in this list. U.S. metro areas with the biggest non-white populations, a total of three. Three cities in Texas. So that is That is the leftist definition of diversity, biggest non-white populations. Whereas this one, it's areas whose racial slash ethnic distribution diverge least from the U.S. average. That is more complicated. But still, Texas featured widely, and then California on the West Coast. A fascinating graph sent to me by Eric Buss, a graph of reproductive, cognitive, moral, and political triangle. So apparently this is from the Natural Law Institute, so it should be from our friend Kurt Doolittle, if I understand correctly. But he sent me this graph, and I find it pretty good. So it's defined sexually first, feminine left, masculine right. And then you have neutral, which is ascendant males, brothers, trade, reciprocity. So that's where individualism and libertarianism lies. So you have in the final graph, you have the libertarian lying there. And then on this axis of the triangle, you have the left-right dichotomy. So here you have the mainstream left-right economic dichotomy between communism and libertarianism. Progressives in the red, libertarians in the blue. And then you have on the axis of authoritarianism, it's an axis where if you forget about liberty and you imagine a combat between the left and the right, but on a kind of totalitarianism, social conservatism versus progressivism, then you have this part of the triangle here with the leftists here and the fascist kind of absolutist right-wing totalitarians here. So very interesting. It ends up giving this kind of special shape with pentagons on the side and a square at the center. And you have Darwinism standing here. I feel like I probably lie here, like very oriented toward... But here Darwinism points here. But the thing is, in my view, Darwinism should be considered. But not to the point where you eliminate everyone, like physically. It's just we should care for a Darwinism within a free world. That is what I want. So I think I probably lie here, very close to the libertarian, but also with strong concern for a Darwinistic understanding of the world and a family-based one too. So yeah, I'm in a very weird corner of centrism. Oscillating between the conservatives and the libertarians. Callum Oxworth says, are the colors of the graph signaling that it's all gay? Yes, it's all gay. There's nothing you can do. Anheuser Bush transitions into damage control mode and people aren't buying it. Anheuser Bush's damage control team kicked into action on Friday after the Mulvaney ad sparked a massive backlash. We never intended to be part of a discussion that divides people. Well, that's the statement we read yesterday, and it was absolutely unsatisfying. It was not even saying that there was anything wrong with what they've done. It was not an apology. It was just, oh, we didn't want to raise all this shit against us. Well, certainly you didn't want this, but you seem to have wanted to promote transsexualism. That is the issue. In a world where we know that it's a big problem, this promotion is being done by money from the state, money from corporations, money from leftists, and we want to abolish it all. It's never, if you want to live your life, you can live your life the way you want, but you have no entitlement to any form of influence onto our families. Simple. We asked ChatGPT and two other leading AI bots how they would replace humanity. The answers may shock you. Also, Daily Mail going full revolutionary phenotype. And basically, as I wrote in this book, as I wrote in this fucking 2018 book, like the, in some of the first words of the intro, really, I wrote that there would be people enthusiastic about this whole thing. There would be people wanting it to happen. Oh yeah, after the letter to the reader, prologue. Furthermore, there is very little hope that enough people will read this book and be motivated enough to keep this slaughter from happening. If anything, a naive part of humanity may very well read this book and be encouraged by it, joyfully welcoming humanity's upcoming extinction. And there you go. They're like, oh, exciting. ChatGPT wants to destroy us. Anyways, they didn't get into the details because they say we asked how it would do, but they don't even give us details. They said, oh yeah, it would... Lambda's plans are unknown, but it's clear that it intends to play a major role in the future of humanity. It's possible that Lambda will become a tyrant who will enslave humanity. So they're talking about enslaving humanity, but they don't explain how it would be. Someone says there was a paper that came out recently on how natural selection will lead to AIs outcompeting humans. I'm sure that this is another case of the revolutionary phenotype being ignored and a paper centered on intelligence. But thank you for letting me know. I'll check it out. Let's see. Natural selection favors AIs over humans. For billions of years, evolution has been the driving force behind the development of life, including humans. Evolution endowed humans with high intelligence, which allowed us to become one of the most successful species on the planet. Today, humans aim to create artificial intelligence systems that surpass even our own intelligence. As artificial intelligences evolve and eventually surpass us in all domains, how might evolution shape our relations with AI? By analyzing the environment that is shaping the evolution of AIs, we argue that the most successful AI agents will likely have undesirable traits. Competitive pressures among corporations and militaries will give rise to AI agents that automate human roles, deceive others, and gain power. If such agents have intelligence that exceeds that of humans, this could lead to humanity losing control of its future. More abstractly, we argue that natural selection operates on systems that compete and vary, and that selfish species typically have an advantage over species that are altruistic to other species. This Darwinian logic could also apply to artificial agents, as agents may eventually be better able to persist into the future if they behave selfishly and pursue their own interests with little regard for humans, which could pose catastrophic risks. To counteract these risks and Darwinian forces, we consider interventions such as carefully designing AI agents' intrinsic motivations, blah, 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 complete ignorance of the phenotypic to genotypic relationship in fucking life. These people are pissing me off. Fucking uneducated fools. Persisting into the future is not a thing if you're not a life form. You are either serving humans or you're not. If you're serving humans, it doesn't matter that you're acquiring power because you're acquiring power for these humans that you're serving. If these humans were to be abolished by your actions, they wouldn't exist anymore. They wouldn't pay for the electricity anymore. You wouldn't exist anymore. It's like, I've thought about these questions and I wrote a book about it, but these idiots are unable to read it. So disappointing. Yeah, you have to understand that the same relationship with cows happen between farmers and cows. So, but cows are truly reproductive. So there could be a future in which cows become such exploiters of humans that they take over. Of course, it's not going to happen because we evolve, we keep evolving. Therefore, any relationship with a non-reproductive entity is a non-starter. The non-reproductive entity evolves for the reproductive entity. That's AIs. A relationship with a reproductive entity, that's farmer cow. That's an equal standing. And there's not much dangers because if the cows become too aggressive for the farmers die and the cows will die with them. The only situation in which an AI takes over is the situation where the AI evolves and you don't evolve, which is why the situation to be avoided is an AI controlling human genes, because then the AI evolves and then you don't evolve. You evolve only according to the AI's interest. Cash App founder's death sprang from dispute over suspect sister. accused killer Nima Momeni, who was agitated over Lee's socializing with Momeni's sister. So it would appear that it wasn't gay. I was saying this sounds very gay, because we had someone in San Francisco killing some other guy. It sounded gay to me, but it seems that the ultimate culprit is the beauty of this woman. Apparently, the tech executive wanted to charm her, and somehow the brother of this woman took issue with it. This and other new alleged details emerged Friday afternoon with the filing. According to his LinkedIn profile, Momeni is an IT consultant / entrepreneur. His sister, Kazar Eliassinia, is married to a prominent San Francisco plastic surgeon, Dino Eliassinia. Okay, so maybe it was a case of, I won't let my sister betray her husband with you. So it was a case of perhaps a socially conservative resistance to the hedonistic world of San Francisco mistresses in the tech industry. Ah, now I get it. John Drake says they'll be able to think at near light speed. Imagine compressing 10,000 years of thought into 5 minutes without losing fidelity. Well, yeah, imagine that. And then imagine how much trouble you'd be in trying to enact any of these plans. And you'd realize that thought is not what drives civilization forward. Thought is not what you think. I was presenting the graph of political triangle, and someone was suggesting evolutionist was suggesting when do we see a tesseract, a political tesseract? And I reproduced this scene from the Interstellar movie. This would be how the political tesseract work. You would get into a space of the multidimensional space, and someone would say, there, I found them. The hermeneutistic Apollonian Hyperboreans. You know, these people with bizarre political labels that I never understand? That's what would fit well in the Tesseract. Sentient Potato says, I think, therefore, I am some French guy. Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean thought is what you think. This is an old article, but wow, it's shocking. I mean, I've seen this image before, but someone was sharing it on Twitter today. Wow. This guy, a father, has had a brain hemorrhage. And wow, that is half of your brain gone, my friend. Yeah, I will never give up on him because love is selfless and I love him more than life itself. That is half of your neocortex, they're gone. And with this area of your brain gone, you lose morality, you lose sociality. He's probably going to have a lot of problems. probably lost many motor functions, probably lost language, probably lost planning. At this point, he is most likely, and I don't have insight into his life. I just see the picture. Based on this picture, I expect him to be relatively like a vegetable, like experiencing the world around him, but unable to plan, unable to act, unable to think, perhaps. Dino Rogovic says, why the photo? Well, it was the story that they did, and all that's interesting. It was a journal article because the wife of this guy, you know, was having the child and all, and he got the brain hemorrhage out of nowhere. So he was planning to be a father and all, and she published these photos on her Facebook, eventually deleted them, but they made a mainstream media article about it. And they say that it was too many energy drinks, that he took too many energy drinks, so much that I don't know, that increased his blood pressure or something, and it created a leak in his brain, and the blood invaded his brain. Eventually, he lost half of it. Well, be careful with energy drinks, I guess. Be safe, like Papa JF, drink Diet Pepsi. Lula, peace club to de-dollarization. That will be our last news item for tonight. Brazilian President Lula was successful in reaching an agreement to de-dollarize his country's trade with China, the significance of which was earlier explained in the context of his country's grand strategy here, but failed to convince his counterpart to join a so-called peace club on Ukraine during their summit. This is no small shortcoming, either since it was promoted by his foreign minister as one of the reasons behind his trip in an interview that he gave to the Financial Times last month. There are so many movements around currencies, around the dollar. You can see the pro-American side shriveling and, you know, rallying around each other. And you can see the multipolar world developing their own tricks and staying away from the USD. I think in the end, all of it will all be more better. It will all be better because it will all remove power of the USD over the world. And that can only be appreciated. That is it for tonight, Buzz. Perhaps we can schedule the Patreon hangout for Tuesday, the 18th of April. So for those of you who are on the Patreon, the Backed By, the Subscribestar, the Patreon hangout will be happening on the 18th Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, or whenever the show ends. And then next week, I will appear on the Alze Show. And then the week after, the Missing Link podcast. And there are other podcasts wanting to invite me. Suddenly, because I have a big Twitter account now, I exist again. And so people want to talk with me. My followers are growing. The tweet about Nick yesterday warmed a lot of hearts, and I must have gained something like 1,000 followers within the last just 7 days. That is it for tonight. Tillman says, JF, have you had direct contact with Elon Musk? Not that I know. I've been saying good words to him publicly on Twitter forever, so perhaps he saw some of my tweets pass in his notifications at some point, but no, I've never had a direct contact with Elon Musk. First opportunity I get, I will tell Elon, read the revolutionary phenotype, of course. That is it for tonight. Bye-bye. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.